welcome back to the Cine Club podcast. I'm Matthew.
I'm Ben.
Samantha.
And I'm Jake. Today we'll be talking about one of Hollywood's more recent phenomenons, the biopic, a genre that has taken the world by storm over the past few years, coming just as big as the superhero film. What are everyone's favourite biopics?
You want to start?
I might as well. Well, I can think of a few that I like, but I must admit, when I was going through, I was looking at a few, and you know, when you say biopic, I think everybody just assumes the music ones.
Yeah.
So, like, I like quite a lot of the music biopics. I'm sure we're probably going to come back to a few of them. But the one I went with was the film Air from 2023. Was it 2023? Yeah, I think so. And I love that film, honestly. I think it was really underrated at the time because it was... It did come out in cinemas. I saw it in cinemas. Because my brother had seen it, because my brother's like a proper
like shoe fan.
He's a proper trainer head. Yeah, he's like one of he's like one of those people. He's like one of those
David
people.
Lynch film.
He's like one of those people you'd see on like, you know, those programs they do on Netflix where it's like these like trainer collectors and they've go to all these conventions and they're all like wrapped in plastic and all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah. He used to be like quite a lot like that. He's less like that now. But at the time, he was he was interested because he loves basketball, Michael Jordan. I was like, right, sounds cool. So he went to see it with my grandparents and they were all like, yeah, yeah, it's a brilliant film. So I went to see it separately. And yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's an interesting story because obviously like Air Jordan's just like sort of a, it's like a, it's a brand that everybody knows now, I think. Quite popularized for nerds by Spider-Verse, I'll say. But it is, you know, everybody knows like an Air Jordan shoe. So it was like, that could be quite good. And then you get the combo of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who are generally have a pretty good track record.
My favorite couple.
Exactly that. You know, Hollywood's favorite gay couple. So so they're in this film. And I was like, all right, okay, that's good. But then, you know, on top of that, you also get Viola Davis, who's brilliant.
She owns the film.
She
owns my God.
She like totally steals the show. Like she is arguably the best part. And Jason Bateman's really good in it. Chris Tucker's not in it much, but what he is in of it, he's really funny.
Yeah.
I think it's a great ensemble cast. The fact it's so in your face 80s is the other reason why I think I loved it so much. Because like straight out the gate, you get that like it's sort of like everything important that happened in 1984 culturally set to Money for Nothing by Dire Straits. So I was like, I was won from that like alone. Yeah. I was like, this is brilliant. And then and the soundtrack overall is just
incredible.
It's just full of 80s bangers, which is like really, really cool. I mean, I'm biased. I love the 80s. I love Nike shoes. Call me a shill, whatever. Sell out, you know. Let's get a sponsorship going. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's fun because it's like you take for granted that at that point Nike like didn't really have, they weren't like the biggest company. Yeah. Like I feel like everybody now just defaults like, oh yeah, Nike shoes. They're like, so everybody just knows them. Like it's just a common thing, but like, it's quite interesting to see it from that perspective of like before they had like a sports division or like a basketball brand or anything like that. And I just like them like all sort of coming together to work out how they can like gamble all their money on this, you know, this up and coming basketball player that Michael Jordan. I don't know. I think, you know, you might have heard of him, but I mean, well, yeah.
You hadn't heard of him?
No.
I was being sarcastic. The joke was everybody's heard of him. He's winding us up. You've never heard of Michael Jordan?
His name rings a bell, but
okay, fine.
I don't know much about him, but I know. Yeah, I know Michael Jordan.
I know the film Space Jam. Let's just say
I thought that was like his breakout role. Like, I've only seen... It's like, I thought O.J. Simpson was an actor as well.
O.J. Simpson, I mean, he
did other things.
He did, famously.
maybe he didn't. No, he did.
No. Well, O.J. Simpson was a football player before all of that. So, yeah, I see what you mean. Michael Jordan, I guess Michael Jordan, like, he didn't really... Unlike O.J. Simpson, who did act in a few things with questionable skill. But Michael Jordan was only really in Space Jam. And I guess the Michael Jordan, the Michael Jackson Jam video. That's the only other thing that I can think of where he's like in it. But despite that, I think the fact that they like, he basically used the whole Nike deal to like create this brand of like, he's not just the basketball player. He's like the greatest basketball player, you know, he's like really cool. he's playing basketball with Bugs Bunny, all that kind of thing. Like, I couldn't think of any other basketball players who could get away with that. I know they tried to do it again with LeBron James, that was just terrible because he has no charisma, like, whatsoever. But
I was going to quote LeBron James in Space Jam, then realized I was going to say something that Michael Jordan says in Space Jam. He goes, "You guys are nuts."
That's just from the original Space Jam. But
you know what? I thought Air was actually really funny as well.
There's two standout bits
that I really liked. It's when he's talking about what's he called, Adi Dassler.
Yeah,
and he finally moves on. He goes, "Well, he's having a meeting in Nuremberg," and he goes, "Nuremberg."
It's like because he's taking the mic out.
It was that bit, and it was when they tell Ben Affleck's character, they're like, "Wait, just come into the meeting a bit late."
Yeah,
and he comes in, he overdoes it. He's like, "I was talking about Harmer, the owner of a $1 billion company." And I really don't have time to be doing this. And they're all looking at him like, "Shut up.
You're going to ruin this." Little guy in the lab. They've got the little downstairs lab where he's like inventing all these shoes. It's like, I don't know. I think it's just a good... Because, yeah, it's really funny. That character, the one who he's taking the mic out of because he's like on Adidas' side or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like really funny because there's a bit... It's like towards the end of the film where he like loses his temper.
He's like
and he like starts yelling at him through the phone. And like Matt Damon's just on the other side. Like
that's another bit. Like when he's threatening to like kill him and Matt Damon goes, "Yeah, what if it goes wrong?" He goes, "I'll be best friends, won't we?"
Yeah, so then I don't care.
I thought it was great.
They do that, the sort of biopic thing in the end where it like cuts to like the ugly real photos and also like what happened to all of them. Mm. And it's like says that guy did exactly what he said he wanted to do, where he retired and he lives off his fortune completely by himself. Yeah. Like,
oh yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like how they don't show Michael Jordan's face at all.
Yeah,
I actually do quite like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Does he speak for himself? Like, they big him up, but like, I think having him be like too prominent in it would distract because then everybody really would just be banging.
I just realized that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. They never show him, which I think is pretty cool.
You just see the back of his head.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is great because and it also draws more attention to Viola Davis's character.
She is. She's so good in it.
Oh, the scene where she's calling him up and negotiating the deal.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, that's not a business work, and just like change it.
I love the fact even like him as a character, the fact that he's like, "I actually agree with you. It's just I don't know if it's possible, but because I believe in Michael Jordan so much, I'm going to like do everything I can to try and do that." Because like the two of them understand each other. And even just the fact, like that first meeting they have where he basically just like shows up at their house and they like sit down together and he like tries to convince her that like, you know, this is worth your time. But she's just like, she's so like straight to business. She knows what she's doing. And I like that because like Michael Jordan, to say that he knew what he was doing at that point in his life and would have like, you know, become as rich and famous as he is now without her helping him with that, that would have been doing her a disservice. So I think not having it about him, like saying, "Oh, Michael Jordan negotiated this, he did all of that," because that's not how it was, you know, as far as I can tell anyway. I think she's a much more compelling character because she's like the hidden figure in his story, you know, which I think is... That's where I think biopics work, where they're telling you something that you didn't know before.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to retell a story that everybody kind of knows, which is why I'm worried about the Beatles ones.
I was just going to say the same.
Because, like, everybody knows the story of the Beatles. It's not, like, new information. Whereas this, I knew what an Air Jordan shoe was.
Yeah, no one knows about who made the shoe.
Nobody really, I wouldn't have thought many people really knew the full extent of the story, which, and to make a, like, quite compelling comedy film out of it, I think is quite impressive. So... Yeah, that's my film Air. I'm glad most of you liked it anyway. That's
good.
It's a hidden gem. It's quite a recent film for me, really. I don't pick things anything that came out after 2010 as a rule, but
just don't really like sports, so I just couldn't get into it.
I don't like sports either, but I quite enjoyed it,
Sports, ew.
I know. Well, I'm sort of the same because that was why I was apprehensive and didn't see it immediately because I was like, I don't really know anything about basketball. I know of, like I say, I know of Michael Jordan because I used to watch Space Jam so much as a kid. So I was like, okay, that was my, like, you know, the door is open because of that. But I was like, yeah, I don't really know anything about how basketball works, really. But
yeah,
but I think it is a bit more about the sort of brand and side of it. But I can see, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I wasn't a Space Jammy sort of kid. I just didn't see it. So it, like, there was nothing about the film. There was
nothing about it.
That like was like, oh yay! I just sort of
not even the 80s music, any of that.
It's okay.
It's like, okay.
That was redeemable with that.
Yeah. Okay,
but
that's good.
The rest of it, sports, ooh, yucky.
Yeah.
Sound though. I can't speak. What's going on? I'm getting too excited about Michael Jordan's shoes. But the bit in the soundtrack where they start playing Tempted by a Squeeze.
Oh,
I was like, what? I was like, Jesus. And then the whole bit where he's talking about the Springsteen song.
Oh,
I thought that
was
really funny. He's like, I'm belting out enthusiastically. And he's like, I don't know, I probably looked at the lyrics.
Well, I like the way they do that. And then they use that song at the end. That's like the sort of thing that wraps the whole narrative up that, yeah, like, actually the gamble paid off and he's not going to be like Springsteen. So
with the ending, I initially rolled my eyes when he was sprinting. I was like, okay, so we saw this coming. And then he doesn't. He's like, that's terrible. That's terrible. That's awful. That's horrible. I like that enormously. It's
so funny.
Finally, a character I can relate.
That's the Matt Damon, because the whole film, whenever someone has a problem with them, they default to you, fat bastard. He's like really upset about it. Like Ben Affleck's like, do you run? And he just looks down at him, like, what do you think? Yeah. I felt so bad for him.
I love that. I know. It's a really funny dynamic, though. Yeah. I think he's a really funny character. But yeah, no, that's, there you go. That's my pick. Like I say, I'm glad you've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What are we going to do next? Are we going to
We'll just go around the table. That isn't there. So my film that I picked, I've been sort of itching to find some way to talk about it for ages and ages and ages. And it's A Complete Unknown, the second Bob Dylan biopic that they made, because they made one in 2007
with
Cate Blanchett and
everyone else.
About seven people playing him. Heath Ledger, Christian Bale. Else.
I'm gonna have to watch that.
Why so many people?
Because
I mean, not to get distracted, but
it was meant to be like the different eras of his life,
right?
But then it didn't. I don't think it did that well. But
it's a very Bob Dylan way of doing that style of film. Yeah. I think, but,
But A Complete Unknown. I think I watched it with you.
You did, yeah.
I want to watch it with you, and that was the second time I'd seen it.
Was it?
I just never told you.
Oh.
I went before that with all my mates and we all went dressed as Bob Dylan.
Oh, that is like that. You've kept that a secret for like a year. That is tragic. I'm very glad you didn't tell us at the time, to be fair, but still.
But
wow.
I like it. I'm not like, I feel bad because I'm quite like, if it's about someone I like and someone I know about, I will watch it and chances are
you're going to love it. Yeah, you just like, kind of know.
I was really apprehensive when Timothy Chalamet was cast because I was into Bob Dylan by then. I was like, really?
He's quite a familiar face. I think it's always harder to take them seriously when it's like someone you know someone from other stuff.
But then I think he smashed it.
Yeah.
He did genuinely look very Bob Dylan.
He did,
every time he was wearing his sunglasses or whatever, you couldn't tell it was Timothy. Like,
yeah.
You were like, what? And then you take the glass off and you're like, oh yeah, it is.
It's his face, but but it's a really convincing transformation.
I think it was what got me, what I really enjoyed about him as Dylan was he got the mannerisms spot on as well.
Totally.
Like whenever someone, especially when it cuts to when he's wearing the sunglasses all the time and he's always on opium or whatever he was doing. And someone tried, it's when he's talking to that girl and she's like, oh, I love you. Doesn't that scare you? And he goes, well, I just met you. So, And he just walks off. But I think he's really good. I think everyone else is great as well.
I think the whole cast does a really good job. I think Monica Barbaro as Joan Baez.
She's really good.
She's really underrated. Boyd Holbrook as Johnny Cash. Oh, he's great, tremendous.
Yeah. He has some of the funniest scenes, I think.
Yeah, I think any time he turns up, it's really funny. And Edward Norton as Pete Seeger. Yeah, that's the other one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are really, really good in it.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the fact that it's it's not just about Dylan. It sort of depicts the whole Greenwich Village folk music movement, and the fact that it's not trying to do all of Bob Dylan's life. It's just the start, how he got to Newport and basically stops once he goes electric, and then it's not folk music anymore. I think that's a much better way of trying to do it and concentrate it into a smaller thing, which I think something that they've started doing in more biopics recently,
they did it with
the Springsteen one, and there was another one that I saw not that long ago that did that. I can't remember what it was though. It'll come back to us, but where the just focus it. Actually, it might be the Michael Jackson one. It's not out yet, but they're doing the same thing with that, where I think they're just doing from the Jacksons up to like Bad and then cutting it off at that point. Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's going to end with the Pepsi incident. Cuts the black and blows up.
No, but I think it's a better way of doing it, because there's too much ground to cover sometimes. And like, Bohemian Rhapsody was like arguably the one.
Oh God, don't bring up that film.
That was like arguably the one that started the whole trend. But like, that tries to do the entire story of Queen but you know, they can't do it.
They're doing it so badly.
Yeah, but it's just such a Hollywoodified version of that story, and like, because they had to like cook it down into like a 2-hour narrative, and it just doesn't work, you know. It's like
historically inaccurate.
And it's full of lies, that's the thing. It's just like most of it's not right, and it's just like seems so false and like just, you know, not genuine at all.
There's one thing like taking creative liberties for stories a little bit, and then there's another thing just being lazy and making multiple lies and then present them as if it's the truth.
To try and make it like it's a factual story.
And then people believe it, and then it's like, no, stop being an idiot.
Well, speaking of that, there's a bit, when James Mangold, when he wrote the script, he was allowed, he got in contact with Bob Dylan thinking he would never get back to him, and he went, oh, do you want to read the script? And Bob Dylan got back to him, which is like insane.
Yeah, because he ignores everything generally.
He went round to Bob Dylan's like mansion where no one ever goes, and Bob Dylan was like, sit down. And Bob Dylan read the script, like he was reading his part.
Yeah. He did a table read, didn't he?
Just him and James Mangold, and he's reading Timothée Chalamet's part. And then for some reason he went, I want to add this bit.
And something then that never actually happened.
James Mangold goes, all right, who was it? And he went, don't know, never happened. And it's the bit where, you know, when he meets the blues singer when they're recording for Pete Seeger's TV show.
Yeah, never happened. Oh, did it not?
No, that guy doesn't exist. But he's the son, the guy who plays him is either the son, he's the son of Muddy Waters.
Oh, right. So it's kind of like paying tribute to that without working it into the narrative.
Yeah, you mentioned how it builds up to him going electric.
Yeah.
That is my favourite bit, is when he's, so what's her face? She's just Sylvie Ruto, her actual name.
Yeah.
She leaves
Suze Rutolo.
She leaves. And then he's like getting ready to play electric.
Yeah.
And I just love the line where they're all walking down the stairs and he's like, oh, what are we going to do? And he goes, play three songs, get the fuck out. I just love that. And I love the lines where he's fuming all the time. Like when he meets.
He starts giving them back chat. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. But that whole ending when he goes electric is so cool.
Yeah, I really like that. I just think the whole thing works, because I think he works well as like the sort of shy initial Bob Dylan, but then once he comes into his own and they do that like hard cut into him in the glasses and the like black coats and all that, like that's really cool, because that just signifies the like that switch, the switch in both his style of music and his attitude at that point, and like and how he basically like alienates himself from everyone else at that because of that. But like, I mean, the performances are spot on. The voice, it could have been a really silly little voice, but I think it works really well.
He pulls it off well.
He sells it with the mannerisms. He sings the music really well as well. Yeah. That's another thing that I think gets slightly overlooked, because not to keep coming back to Bohemian Rhapsody, but like to slight that one more time, that's not actually him singing, isn't it? No. So like, Timothée Chalamet basically had to teach himself how to look like Bob Dylan, talk like Bob Dylan, sing like Bob Dylan, and like have all of the sort of Bob Dylan-isms.
When he was getting ready, I'll send you the video later because it's really good.
Right.
He's on the set of Dune.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's playing Mr. Tambourine Man on guitar.
I've seen that. I'm sure he's got his still suit on. He's playing his guitar, and I'm sure he has like a tennis table over on the other side of the dressing room as well, which at the time was no one thought of it, but that was foreshadowing.
How long in advance has he prepared for these roles?
Apparently he'd been prepping for Marty Supreme for like 7 years or something. He said he took like 7 years to teach himself how to do like be that good at table tennis.
I never used to like him, but he's really good. He's one of my favourite actors, proper
white boy of the century at the minute. I love him. He's like, I want everything good to happen to him. I want him to win his Oscar. I want him to keep getting invited on SNL because he's really funny. I love the guy.
I think he should have won for Complete Unknown.
He should have, because I think he absolutely nailed it.
I am biased, obviously, but
I think if the film had came out 10 years ago, he would have won. But because the biopic genre has kind of become just a thing, and like the script says, it's almost become like a Marvel cliche thing now, where they're like, you know, they're doing like crossovers and like trying to like...
Well, to make... be fair, there's only... They're doing those Beatles films. They're doing a Roy Orbison film. They've done a Bob Dylan film. There's only two more away from having a Traveling Wilburys film.
Oh, that's true. Actually, get all of them.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I say all of that, I still lap them up, though.
Oh,
Do you not?
No, they really, 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 really get on my nerves.
Right. What was your pick, actually?
Oh, yeah.
Rocketman, because it's the film that I don't despise.
Okay.
Rocketman, because Rocketman's not, like, a format like the rest of them, is it? Rocketman's, like, a musical.
It doesn't pretend to be accurate, and that's the full point, where
it's like
sort of telling it through... the drug sort ofness of it, so it doesn't, and people can tell that it's not meant to be accurate, but other ones pretend to be, and it really annoys us.
Yeah. Rocketman works really well because Rocketman, it plays out like a musical, so it's I could imagine that being like, because obviously like biopic films are like quite a new thing, but like stage shows where it's like the story of this singer's life, they've been around for years, so like Rocketman almost feels like one of those where it's like every time they do like, oh, we need to throw in an Elton John song here, it's like, let's make a massive like musical number and everybody's getting into it. And it's like you say, it feels like this drug-fueled fever dream where this didn't actually happen, but like, it's still sort of telling the story. Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about Elton John, to be honest, so I don't know how accurate it is, but...
I don't know.
What we need to know is Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most important thing, really, that he ever did, so arguably...
It actually is, though.
It is great.
Can't forget about Sherlock Gnomes as well.
Oh,
that one's so underrated.
Underrated sequels episode, Sherlock Gnomes.
Exactly.
We need to get it in there. It's perfect.
Rocketman is really good, though. I like the soundtrack's great. I also like Richard Madden as... what the hell is he called?
The evil gay fella.
John Reed. Evil gay fella.
That's just sort of because Elton John's the nice gay fella. Well, probably not, but
I do like how Town Edge, and like I'd heard this, it could be lies. When he was doing this film, he like purposely got someone like shave his hairline back for when he was playing an older Elton John.
Oh, really?
And his barber, like, do you really want to do this? And he's like, yeah, go on.
Whatever happened to Taron Egerton? You don't see him and stuff anymore, don't
he's
you?
He's in Tat now.
I don't know. It's
a bit of a shame.
He's just in like pants films.
Oh, I thought he was on the up. Well, I haven't really kept up with him, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing
he's good, mind. I do like him.
He's still good, but, like, that's weird, though, isn't it? Because I was just thinking, maybe I mixed them up in my head, but Rocketman and the second Kingsman, which also had the actual Elton John in.
Yeah, and then he sings Elton John song in Sing.
Why was Elton John... That's... Yeah.
They're like, best mates.
Why was there so much, like, overlap in cinema at that time between Elton John, Taron Egerton? Go on.
That was around 2017, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
I've got a joke, but I don't want to... I'm not saying it.
Okay.
Aww. I was going to reckon Elton John was like killing off like Bowie and Prince and Tom Petty and that. And he was getting himself
cementing his legacy.
Yeah.
Like, he's like,
I'm still here.
It's like the quickening in Highlander. Every time one of them died, he's like, another biopic. Exactly. Let's go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think Rocketman was the first like biopic I'd seen. Elton John was the first musician I'd probably got into, other than like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
But I do like Elton John. You don't, do you?
I don't mind him. I think it might just be because of... I think it's because...
homophobic.
He's homophobic.
Yeah, that's what it is. No, man. It's because I think those biopics actually... I think they actually did put us off the bands because I don't really like Queen either, which is like...
I'm not that big.
I know, I'm sorry.
What is wrong with you?
I think they're a bit overrated.
Yeah, that's all it is. I think
the next
it's
time
like,
I see someone saying Bohemian Rhapsody the best song ever, I'm clipping them across the yard.
I don't know, Bohemian Rhapsody I'll defend. It's just everything else I'm not that bothered on. But like,
you're just wrong.
I know. It's not that I don't like them. I just think because I grew up when they were coming out and those films.
How old are you? Oh, the films.
The films, man. I mean, in that time period, Queen and Elton John music was inescapable because everybody had like seen those films and like decided that they were like the best things since sliced bread.
We had a lad in school who thought he was Freddie Mercury. I'm not making that up. He'd run on the scream, the schoolyard shouting "Ao," and I'm not like he would do the thing.
The live aid.
Someone's going, "Shut up, man! We're sick of it." And I was like, "Oh my god!"
You sure he wasn't just doing the banana boat song?
I don't know what that is. We're going to move on immediately.
Anyway.
Oh, no, I do.
That's what I meant. No, Rocketman is a good example. Like, but the thing, this is, I'm going to, because I'm, to bring it back to A Complete Unknown, between those two, one of the reasons I liked A Complete Unknown is because generally the biopic structure at that point with Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocketman, those are just the two in my head that I associate as like being the ones that pushed it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, the structure is they get really big, one of them's an arsehole, you get the downfall with drugs and alcohol and their life's miserable, and then they pick it back up for one big, brilliant performance at the end. It's all good. But A Complete Unknown kind of does that, but the low point of that one is basically just Bob Dylan gets mad. The rest of them don't want him to play folk music. He plays the folk music anyway. Like, yeah, they don't make him. They don't make him do, like, you know, the either could have like spiraled it and be like, oh, he's on loads of drugs. He's an alcoholic. Everybody's worried about him. But they don't do that. He's like really sure of himself.
Well, he was, like, he hit it quite well.
Yeah,
he was like, well, no, yeah, like, I think, him up on it, I don't think,
because Bob Dylan, just in his nature, it just seems like he's made of drugs. Like, he's not even like on drugs. It's just, well, it's just him.
I also like, this is the last thing I'm going to say about A Complete Unknown, I like the little references they made to like actual, like, to the Bob Dylan like mythos or whatever, like the whole thing of Pete Seeger going to grab the axe.
Oh,
which
is
like a rumor for years that he was actually going to start smashing
he's
stuff
gonna, like, yeah, he's going to chop all the kit up and when then, he was playing the new
and then the other one, it might be a reach, but you know the film ends with him on the motorbike.
I reckon
that might be a reference to the motorbike crash he had. And
well,
because
that
he stopped touring for about 10 years.
Yeah, because that was kind of the end of that era. Yeah, so it's quite a good place to cap the film. Oh,
but
that makes
you got
sense.
A jump scare then, didn't you?
Just
the bit in the film.
It's
the
really
bit in the
loud,
film when it cuts to him on the bike. I'm not joking. He leapt up in his chair
because it goes from Woody Guthrie in like his last moments, Bob Dylan quietly serenading him, and then it like smash cuts to him on a motorbike, and it's like full volume surround sound. It just, I don't know, it caught us off guard. I'm a jumpy person naturally, though. I jump with all sorts, like literally, like in any films. I've become worse with it now, I think, because sometimes you expect it, and but I wasn't expecting that. So anyway, good film. Rocketman's a really good one. Don't think there's... Was there anything else you wanted to say about...
Nothing about Rocketman.
Go on, what about biopics in general then?
Biopics,
what is it about them
really,
that
really,
really,
really get
you
on my nerves? Because they can either be done really well or really, really not well.
Okay.
And I think this is probably the fifth time I've talked about this week to people about how much I hate The Imitation Game.
Oh, right.
I despise it.
I've not seen that one, but...
Don't.
Is that the one about Alan Turing?
Yeah.
Butch is the character.
It completely changes history. There's one
really?
Thing taking like creative license to be like, oh, we'll do it this way slightly differently. There's another thing getting people who never met each other and making them into major plot points. And it's like, what are you doing? You are butchering like a piece of history that's fascinating anyway.
Yeah.
It's completely changing his character.
Yeah.
But it's such a thing now because it's like the whole Oppenheimer thing. I know everybody like jokes about them like name dropping historical figures like it's a Marvel film,
so
which is like in
this
itself
young lawyer from where he's from, John F. Kennedy. Shut up. Doing
Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we cover Patton?
So what do you guys think?
Sell us on Patton.
Okay.
I thought it was brilliant.
I'm so glad.
You know.
Oh,
that bit.
That bit
was class.
Yeah, that bit.
And then the guy, I didn't, sorry.
Well, for me, what I love about it is that it starts with him giving the rousing speech to the soldiers behind the American flag, and it's all, hoorah, kill him, ah.
Yeah.
And you think, this is going to be your typical, war is amazing.
Yeah.
You know what, guys?
Yeah.
We should die for our country. I would love to. But it's not.
Yeah,
sign
me up.
It's like, he's a poet, and he thinks he's been reincarnated several times, and he's a historian.
Right.
And there's a wonderful scene where they're driving along. He's like, "Take me to the battlefield." And he's like, "Sir, it's this way." And he's like, "No, no, no." And then they drive to the site where there was a Battle of Romans, and he was like, "I was here. And the Carthaginians were there, and we fought."
Yeah.
And it's just, he's so whimsical.
That sounds really good, actually, yeah.
You mustn't have gotten that far really
I really didn't expect you to say the word whimsical talking about Patton.
No, but he is, and he's
well,
like...
that's the joy
and
of it.
Having the ivory-handled revolvers and the ridiculous amount of medals. And he goes into the med bay and he finds the soldier who is shell shocked and he just like slaps him in the head like, "Get this yellow belly bastard out of here right now. I don't want him."
That sounds really good. Okay,
it
never mind,
fun.
You've sold us.
Yeah.
I will watch that now.
And so much of it is just the politics of him and Monty rushing to get to Berlin. So there's a really nice bit where they're in the German command center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Scheiße, Patton's taken Sicily or whatever. And then it cuts to Monty and it's like, damn, Patton's taken Sicily. And it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it George C. Scott who plays
It is,
Patton?
Yeah.
Right.
It's his role, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that and Strangelove.
That's what I was just about to say, because I have seen him in Doctor Strangelove, and he's really, really good in that.
No, fighting in the war room.
It's so good.
I like to think that they're the same characters at different points in their lives.
Yeah, there's like a through line, and it's just that is like, yeah, later on. That's one of his reincarnated versions, exactly. The Doctor Strangelove
They even made a sequel to it.
Really?
To Patton, which is crazy because the film ends 1945 and literally he dies in a car crash a few months after. So I have no idea what they're going to do.
Comes back.
Because it's like they've taken the Third Army
he
away from him.
Again.
He's been too rude. So it's just going to be him doing paperwork and being moody. I don't know what they were thinking, to be honest.
Doing
with you.
Like a sitcom. All the time.
Maybe it's about his son. It might be like Rocky V, but like he's like training up his son or
something.
When
he's dead.
When he's dead.
Like
he couldn't do paperwork if he was, Well, he could do like The Fly too. That's how the sequel to The Fly is basically just the son was born with the same thing and he gradually mutates into The Fly as well. It's not a very good film.
No.
Unsurprisingly. No. But,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's possible. You never know.
This one's class. The Fly 2. Patton sounds good.
Eric Stoltz in it. It's all right. It's not a great film. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen. Anyway, yeah. Why are we talking about The Fly 2 in the biopics episode?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that does sound good, though. I must admit.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all we have time for today. We've covered a lot of ground. From Air Jordans, Bob Dylan, Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocketman, and Patton. Are there any biopics that you would like to see in the future? What would you think the worst biopic ever would be? Great question. And do you think the format is becoming too stale? Get in touch with us through our TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram pages. They're all great ways to keep up to date on Cine Club podcast content and updates.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being engineered and edited by Emily Main. Special thanks goes out to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler, and Richard Berry. A reminder that our four cinematic biographers this week have been me, Jake.
Me, Matthew.
Me, Samantha.
Me, Ben. This has been a Cine Club production for Spark. Thanks for listening.